This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 9th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The 62nd Annual Opera in the Ozarks runs through July 20th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. This festival of fully produced operas is an educational program for singers pursuing a career in the world of opera. The 2012 productions include A Little Night Music, The Magic Flute, and La Boheme. Tickets and more information are available at opera.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we pay a visit to a farm in Elkins to learn about the economic role young farmers fill. Plus, we find out why the Lifestyles Car Wash in Rogers has an art gallery in its lobby. Also, Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net brings us an update on the latest business news from around the state. Becca Martin Brown tells us what's up in entertainment and more. But first, Little Rock-based Heifer International is getting $8.5 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to continue and expand an East African dairy farming project. It began 4 years ago with a $43 million grant from the Gates Foundation, and this additional funding will take the project through another year and enable Heifer to look into expanding the program into two additional countries. Elizabeth Bintliff is the vice president of Heifer's Africa program. She says the dairy program provides a needed service in Eastern Africa.
It's critical. It's a very important part of people's livelihoods. Many people in Africa are rural farmers, and many of them have very many challenges accessing the markets, being able to be part of the formal economy.
Bintliff says part of the money goes toward building chilling plants for farmers to store their dairy products. She says the program works with small farmers in Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda, and is looking to expand into Ethiopia and Tanzania. The Secretary of State's office is looking through the stacks of papers turned in by various groups trying to get their issues on the ballot. Alex Reed with the Secretary of State's office says they're counting valid signatures of registered Arkansas voters.
We've got all the voter registration data, so it's pretty easy for us, just a simple search. And they look and they've got to meet that threshold. If they do not, then they will be given an additional 30 days to gather more signatures and try to supplement what they've turned in. But if they don't hit that threshold at first, that 62507, then there's no more.
Two people trying to legalize casinos in several Arkansas counties turned in signatures Friday, as well as a former Republican gubernatorial candidate trying to raise the state's natural gas severance tax, and a group that wants to legalize marijuana for medicinal use in the state. Two members of the Razorback volleyball team are in the middle of an overseas trip where they are representing the United States today. Head coach Robert Polizza and senior outside hitter Jasmine Norton are participating in the second annual China-USA Challenge Invitational in China. The American group, comprised of two teams of top collegiate and professional players, will compete against top clubs from the host country. Polizza and Norton are sharing their experiences through the Razorbacks website with blog entries and pictures. More information is available at ArkansasRazorbacks.com. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell 4-1 to the San Antonio Missions last night. The loss was a season-high seventh straight for the Naturals. The Nats will look to break that losing streak as they continue their three-game series against the San Antonio Missions tonight. First pitch at Arvest Ballpark is scheduled for 7:05. Tonight, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout the listening area. We'll have mostly cloudy skies with a low in the upper 60s to lower 70s. Tomorrow, the chance, albeit a lesser one than this evening, for showers and thunderstorms continues. Expect partly sunny skies with highs in the upper 80s to lower 90s. Last summer, the Obama administration proposed strengthening federal child labor laws regarding farm workers under the age of 18. By spring, officials dropped the proposal after farmers and politicians from across the spectrum rose up in protest. Ozarks at-largest Jacqueline Froelich visited with an Ozarks farm family to illustrate the critical economic role young farmers fill and the unique work ethic they cultivate, and she has this report.
Heavy gray clouds drift across a deep blue summer sky above the rolling hills of Circle S Farm, 10 miles north of Elkins. Owners Bill and Sarah Hamm raise polled Herefords, hornless docile hybrid cattle, on their 90-acre spread for commercial beef producers and pure breeding stock.
We run about 45 mama cows here, and my dad runs about 50 head, 45 to 50 over there. So combined about between 90 and 100 head total.
Standing beneath the broad limbs of a Shady Creek maple planted by family 50 years ago, Bill Hamm said he himself is farm-raised.
Oh, it was a lot of work, but it was, you know, best raising you could really have because you're out away from town. You got things to do and that kind of thing. When I grew up, we raised broilers for Tyson's growing up where my dad lives now. And we always raised cattle. My dad switched over to all registered polled Herefords about 1971 when he started and had it all switched over by 73.
Which commenced a joint family tradition with both family farms working in collaboration. In fact, where we are standing is the original family farm where Sarah Hamm was raised.
My father bought this place in 1952 and loved growing up here. And like you said, it's hard work, but you learn values of managing your time and getting everything taken care of.
Sarah loved grooming calves for show and baling hay when she was a girl. Now that she's grown, and with her husband Bill on call for 24-hour shifts at the Fayetteville Fire Department, where he's worked for the past 28 years, she pretty much runs the farm when he's gone, with the help of sons Austin and James. Austin is 17.
One of my first memories would have to be years, it was probably at least 12 years ago, we were working on a fence down there, and I still remember trying to carry one or two T-posts up to Dad when he was hitting them things in. I know I couldn't barely even drag them, but that was always my fondest memory.
Of course, Austin is almost grown and able to tackle any chore. He intends to go into farming full-time once he completes his schooling. His older brother, James, is in his third year of college at the U of A. He's planning to teach high school ag or work for the Cooperative Extension Service. He's not sure yet. He says farm-raised kids understand what real hard work is.
I mean, to me, it's something, you know, very heavy, physical, manual labor. As to another person, hard work may be considered at an office desk. Just from their lifestyle that they're used to. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just what one grows up with.
James' brother Austin says farm kids are cut from a different cloth.
The kids that have actually been grown up and everything on a farm and everything actually tend to be a little bit more respectful. They tend to be able to say, if you look at between the two in school-wise, you look at a farm kid, I mean, they may not have the 100% best grades, but you know that they're trying their hardest. They're trying their best to get their best grades and everything so they don't have to end up on the roadside having to dig a ditch. And then the kid that, say, lives in the city and everything, the only thing he knows is, say, living in a suburb. He doesn't know about all that hard work and everything that you might have to do if you don't get through school and everything. So they might not have near as good of a worth ethic.
And likely what their city friends don't realize is that these young men are up at dawn to help with chores as well as after school and on weekends. This is James.
A good friend of mine, again, he's a very hard worker, but hadn't grown up on the farm. We hauled about 500 square bales, and we almost had to carry him to the truck.
A hard lesson for any urban kid experiencing what life must have been like for most Americans in the early 19th century. Circle S Farm is one of 2,600 family farms in Washington County, among 42,000 in Arkansas, covering 8.3 million acres of ground, raising rice, poultry, catfish, cotton, and grain sorghum predominantly, Agriculture accounts for nearly one quarter of Arkansas's economy, or $16 billion annually, providing one out of every six jobs for adults. There's no accounting of how many young people under the age of 21 work on Arkansas farms. But last summer, for the first time in more than 40 years, the U.S. Department of Labor, prompted by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, proposed revising child labor regulations to strengthen the safety requirements for young people employed in agriculture and related fields under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The proposal sought to prohibit those 18 and under from working with animals in any capacity, using pesticides, conducting timber operations, laboring around manure pits and storage bins, including county grain elevators, bins, silos, feedlots, stockyards, livestock exchanges, and livestock auctions. And children under 16 would be banned from operating power-driven equipment altogether. Within months of when the proposal was floated, a parental exception had been added, exempting farm families from the rule. But still, overwhelming criticism from both conservative and liberal politicians and farm families resulted in the proposal being withdrawn. Cattle farmer Bill Hamm.
Well, when I first heard it, I just thought it was really nuts. I mean, it's something that's really not enforceable. And then younger kids that's even 15, they're able to go out and get a summer-type job. And a lot of it, most kids want to, need to. A lot of times there's a need, not just want. And to prevent them from going out and running just some light equipment or working on someone else's farm or maybe at an agricultural-type place, I think it was just an absolute joke. And it's just absolutely, you know, you talk about the economy and it being kind of down. Let's push it a little further down by cutting off a whole wad of labor here that would be available. You know, kids, you know, of course, you don't want them driving out on the road, you know, like vehicle stuff is beyond 16, of course. That's a no-brainer. But, you know, I started driving tractor when I was 11 with supervision, of course. You're not me out here on the hillsides where it's real dangerous and stuff, and these boys did too. And that's how kids learn and kind of figure out whether that's what they want to do in life, if they like it and that kind of thing, and learn how to do. And just, you know, trying to regulate something like that, you know, I see there's probably places where that's probably been necessary or some extreme things have gone on, but overall, I don't think it's necessary at all.
And spouse Sarah Hamm?
You have to teach them. That's how they learn to the safety and all of this. So it was disheartening when it first came out because it was kind of like, do they feel like that we're not taking care of our kids on the family farm?
Teenager Austin Hamm said if kids aren't allowed to experience farm work, it could skew the entire ag economy.
That might have been the one thing they were wanting to do for the rest of their life. They might have wanted to go into college, major in something in ag. There would be such a decline in all the ag majors if they cut out all the kids on the farms and everything that it would be just incredibly horrible.
Elder brother James says farming is a vocation, not a job.
Farming's another thing that to decide to do it, you almost have to experience it. You can't read about it in a book and decide, I want to do this. There would be almost food shortages because after a certain amount of time, well, people grow old. They get to where they cannot do as much.
Plus, James Hamm said, if enforced, the rule would impede younger people from taking up farming. And he has a point. The average age of Arkansas farmers is around 60 years old. Ultimately, the youth farm worker labor proposal sought to level the playing field for young farm workers, similar to enacted rules for non-agricultural youth workers. Johnny Gonzalez has been an agent with the Washington County Extension Service for the past 14 years. He says family farms are like schools where children learn the ropes very early on.
You know, in the beginning, it's as simple as maybe opening gates and fetching things. In the end, as they get a little bigger and a little more responsible and a little more experience under their belt, then they're more into kind of like an assistant management role and, you know, maybe challenged with going to check the pig to see if it's, you know, or how it's acting, going to check the sheep, see if they're lambing or any signs, or check the cattle and those kind of things. And then there's also the physical help that a 13, 14, 15-year-old it can offer in terms of labor on the farm.
Johnny Gonzalez says the National Farm Youth Club 4-H, which he helps organize here in the Ozarks, is designed to equip young farmers with safety skills and best management practices.
And then would either put them in place as they took over the operation or help put them in place on their parents' farm.
But mostly, says Washington County Extension Agent Johnny Gonzalez, the Obama administration's proposal to revise child labor regulations would hurt the family farmer.
Well, on the one hand, you can see maybe someone's intent in protection of young people, because you look at some of the tasks that are done on a farm, and a lot of those have a certain amount of risk to it, and there's there are several accidents that can happen on a farm, either due to machinery operation or due to large animals. And so on the one hand, you understand the protection from a young person. On the opposite side, though, those things where there is a certain amount of risk certainly add responsibility and maturity to those young people working on the farm, and that work ethic that they learn there, I think, is a thing that they couldn't get somewhere else.
The proposed rule, which has been withdrawn, would have also barred young people from being hired out as farmhands, creating more pressure on an industry already struggling with labor shortages. A Department of Labor press release dated April 26th, terminating the proposed rule, read, "To be clear, this regulation will not be pursued for the duration of the Obama administration. Officials with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Labor will instead work with groups like 4-H and the American Farm Bureau Federation to develop programs to better protect young farm workers." For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. Walgreens announced Thursday that it has entered into an agreement to purchase USA Drug Stores, a regional drugstore chain in the Mid-South owned by Stephen LaFrance Holdings and members of the LaFrance family. The transaction includes 144 stores currently operated under the USA Drug and other brand banners in Arkansas, Kansas, Mississippi, Missouri, New Jersey, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. The acquisition includes corporate offices, a distribution center located in Pine Bluff, and a wholesale and private brand business. The USA Drug acquisition was approximately $438 million. Governor Mike Beebe's week-long trade mission to France should result in expansions of existing French firms doing business in Arkansas and could result in research collaborations for food safety and agricultural productivity. Beebe said that agri research being conducted at numerous Arkansas universities in the fields of nanotechnology and food safety were high priorities. Beebe also noted that the National Center for Toxicological Research near Pine Bluff could also benefit from a French exchange. The governor said he met with five French-based companies that conduct business in Arkansas about possible expansions. Beebe said one of those companies is close to making a decision. Now, Governor Beebe also said Monday that he's inclined to expand the state's Medicaid rolls under a provision in the federal law that was ruled constitutional just a little over a week ago. Beebe argued that as many as 250,000 uninsured Arkansans could benefit from the expansion, with the federal government paying 100% of the costs in the first 3 years, starting in 2014. Ultimately, federal support could be reduced to 90% of the cost, with the state paying the additional 10%. Beebe said it would take a, quote, "pretty dang strong argument" for him to allow Arkansas taxpayers to pay federal taxes without benefiting from the federal coverage. Boosted by a record strong June month of tax collections, Arkansas state government ended its fiscal year on June 30th with a $145 million budget surplus. The final tally was 3.2% higher than forecasters predicted. Individual and corporate income tax collections aided the strong conclusion to the fiscal year, as did a surprising uptick in consumer and business spending. For the full fiscal year, net available general revenues topped $4.75 billion, a new record. The state's online checkbook is now open to the public. The online data center found at transparency.arkansas.gov pools a mountain of revenue and expense data for nearly all of state government. The website allows users to drill into an agency's revenue streams, expenditures, employee salaries, payments to cities and counties, bonded indebtedness, and vendor contracts. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
At the Lifestyles Car Wash in Rogers, there are multiple options for getting your vehicle to sparkle. In addition to a drive-through car wash, there are several hands-on cleaning options. Attendants can use air to clean your floor mats, or vacuum crumbs from your last fast food excursion off the carpet. Or if you prefer motoring around town on two wheels, they can spray off your motorcycle with a water hose. While you wait for your vehicle of choice to be washed or detailed, you can sit inside the green building that from the outside looks like a typical house with a front porch and a garage. Inside the lobby, you can watch television or peruse the art gallery. That's right, this car wash has an art gallery, which displays work created by clients of Lifestyles Incorporated, a nonprofit organization that has served individuals with disabilities since 1976. The location has been home to a car wash for several years, but in 2009, the former owners gave the business to the nonprofit group. Jennifer Maynard, executive director of Lifestyles Incorporated, explains that after receiving the gift, they had to decide what to do with it.
Carol Hart, our founder, can see opportunities in things that other people just normally wouldn't. And she saw it as a great opportunity as a training site for employment. And so what we've developed there is it's a full-service car wash and detail center. And we almost all the people we serve really want to be employed. They want to work in the community, not somewhere where it's just people with disabilities. They want to work. We all like working with a bunch of different kinds of folks. And we had some folks that just for different reasons had not been successful in long-term employment in the community. And so what she saw this as was an opportunity for folks to be in a real business, but it was a safe place to make mistakes. So it's not like, you know, they were hired somewhere and they had a supervisor that didn't really know them. And, you know, so if they were upset about something or they were late for some reason, that they wouldn't immediately be written up or fired. That this gave an opportunity for if someone's never had a boss telling them what to do or has had a boss telling them what to do and didn't like it very much, it's an okay place to learn and to grow into those positions. So they're learning customer service and the high quality of work and being on time and looking good and all of those different skills, being part of a team. So it's worked out extremely well.
The staff of the car wash consists of crew members who worked at the car wash for years before it was owned by Lifestyles, as well as clients of the nonprofit who work as trainees. Kyle Dempsey has been the general manager of the car wash since January, and he has been working with people with intellectual disabilities since he was about 17. Kyle says he had a brother who was disabled, and when he heard about Lifestyles, he decided that was an organization he wanted to become involved with.
We have anywhere from 4 to 5 trainees that come in every day. It's kind of on a rotating schedule. They have set days that they work, but we have different people every day. Some of them work 3-4 days a week. Some of them work 2 days a week. It just kind of depends on their schedule and how we can manage to fit them into the schedule here. They come in and they have a job coach with them. The job coach will usually teach an hour of class in the morning. It's kind of going over stuff that they're going to see throughout the day, like just different customer service situations, what to do and if this happens and that sort of thing. And then they come up here and, they get to work, hands-on with our other staff. And I guess after that, they go back and they have another hour of class where they sit and they talk about the things that happen throughout the day, ways to improve on these things. And I think that plays a real beneficial role in the whole operation of the training that we do, because, they can see it and, they may not notice that, something was wrong when they did something. And so that teaching plays a very vital part in the training that we provide here.
By working at the training site, trainees can put the experience they gained at the car wash on their resume. Executive Director Jennifer Maynard explains that if a job on the staff becomes available, trainees are able to apply for the position just like anyone else. She says what has happened in several cases is trainees have been able to find employment in the community.
We were talking about a fellow that he's in his 40s. He has not had long-term successful employment. He was not real motivated to have employment, volunteered some, but wasn't, even with his volunteer position, wasn't that dedicated to it. And he has been at the car wash as a trainee probably just over a year, maybe a little bit longer, and he just got a job at McDonald's, and he is so proud of that. It's just building him up and, you know, having the satisfaction of getting that paycheck, and, you know, he knows that he's graduated from that and he's moved on, so it's great to see him when he gets his paycheck because he is extremely proud of that.
The Lifestyles Car Wash is a full-service car wash that's open from 8:30 to 5 Monday through Saturday. General Manager Kyle Dempsey says there are a number of packages customers can choose from.
We have packages that are exterior only, you know, just get the outside done in those range. There's three of them that range anywhere from 8 to 12. Then we have our inside and out packages, our full-service washes that range anywhere from, I believe, $15.49 all the way up to $29.99. We also offer a full-service detail center where we do detail work, you know, shampooing carpets, cleaning seats, you know, the whole nine yards, you know, the inch-by-inch type clean. And those range anywhere from $31.99 for the individual details all the way up to $139, $159 for different, you know, full-service detail, you know, full detail packages.
Over the past few months, patrons may have noticed some renovations happening at the car wash, which will be hosting its grand reopening Thursday through Saturday. Executive Director Jennifer Maynard explains part of the renovation included a new coat of paint to make the business a much warmer, friendlier place.
We're also, we're changing the seating. We'll still have one part of the lobby where we'll have a TV, and it's usually on CNN or ESPN. And then the art gallery area has been pretty congested, and so we're going to open that up, and that's going to be additional seating, and we're going to have, you know, that folks can sit and look. It's going to be set more like a gallery as opposed to a store. Things are still be will still be available for purchase, but just not as much, and it won't be. So we have more space for the customers to be seated, and then we are revamping our coffee area, so it's not going to be just a stale cup of coffee, which is what, you know, most people anticipate when they go into a car wash or to get their oil change, things like that. So we're going to have some new additions there as well.
So just more of a coffee shop feel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's exactly what we're going for. And we just, you know, when you're having your car, you know, wash where you're getting, you know, a towel dry and, you know, somebody's vacuuming and doing the windows and all that, you know, it can take 20 or 30 minutes. So we want the customers to be as comfortable as possible while they're in there. And we do have Wi-Fi. We advertise that. So, you know, we want folks to know if you're running in on your lunch hour or going to go in before you go to work in the mornings that you can still get some stuff done while you're there.
The art, Jennifer mentioned, includes items like gift cards, paintings, ceramics, and jewelry created by participants in Lifestyles College for Living art classes. Jennifer says half of the proceeds from art sales goes to the artists, and the other half goes to support the nonprofit's art program. Jennifer says Lifestyles began offering art classes 7 or 8 years ago. They had one instructor teaching 4 hours of art in one small classroom that was also used for educational classes. Today, Jennifer says they have a fabulous, fully functioning art studio at the Blair Center for Visual Arts in Springdale, where they now offer not 4, but 40 hours a week of art classes.
Art has taken off like we never dreamed. One of the things, we visited a couple of other places out of state that had similar programs, and the thing they said you cannot skimp on are the art teachers, that you have to hire professional artists. You can't hire somebody who just likes art, or special ed teachers or administrative folks. You've got to have artists teaching, and that's probably the smartest thing we did. We followed that advice, and the just to see where how far the artists have come is phenomenal. It's from, you know, strictly acrylic paintings, mostly abstract, to now they're working with all kinds of fabrics and textiles and creating three-dimensional collages, and it's just outstanding. We have a show every month somewhere, and our artists are really being recognized for how gifted a lot of them are. You know, just like if you took any other group of people, some just are not very good. I'd be one of those if I were taking any kind of artistic class. But, I mean, we have some folks that truly are just gifted and talented. So that we take every opportunity we can to get their work out. Sam's Club has let us put our art in the company employee store at their main office headquarters, and then we also have the presence in the car wash, which I'm sure to folks seems odd when they come in, but it's just so us. It just suits us perfectly that, you know, we would have a gallery and a car wash. So
some of this artwork will be on display inside the Lifestyles Car Wash's lobby during its grand reopening Thursday through Saturday. Events scheduled during the three-day celebration include a press conference, dirtiest car contest, and a ribbon cutting. Community Day is scheduled for Saturday, July 14th. More information is available at lifestylesinc.org. It is Monday, July 9th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I think I say this every week, that we need to be kids.
Yes, I agree.
Every week. At 2 o'clock today, we can go to see Monday Movie Mania at the Rogers Public Library. Oh. The movie is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Right.
Then we can go and hang out and do something. Oh, go to the Rogers Historical Museum or do something until 5:30.
Okay.
When we can go back to Imaginations Crafts for Families at the Rogers Public Library.
Oh, okay.
And then if you want a little more grown-up entertainment, at 7:30 you can go to the Holiday Island Community Church near Eureka Springs for an Opera in the Ozarks presentation of chamber music.
Oh, very cool.
And you can find out more about that at opera.org.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oboe, clarinet, saxophone, bass clarinet, and bassoon. What a weird combination. Can that possibly work for anything? We'll meet a band who make it work for just about everything. Califax, on the way from a concert in the Netherlands, coming up on Monday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today, tonight at 8 o'clock, following the evening edition of Ozarks at Large, here on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Last Friday, former President Bill Clinton was at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, where doctors are working to find genetic causes of childhood cancer. It's work that would not be possible without the first map of the human genome, which was completed while Clinton was president.
The American people should be very proud that they spent over a period of about 10 years, finishing when I was president, $3 billion for the first sequencing, because that basically sparked this unbelievable gush of private activity, and nobody's done more than St. Jude has to do all this sequencing, find all these genetic variances for various kinds of childhood cancers, and find variances that tell you how to adjust the treatment accordingly.
The first map of the human genome revealed that people of all races are more than 99% similar on the genetic level.
It's a great thing. I mean, I think it's going to, first of all, continue to increase the child survival rate. And when it goes through every aspect of the healthcare system, we were talking about this one, little girls who have the two genomic variances that put you at a high risk of breast cancer, get that. Between that and nanotechnology, at some point there'll never be another mastectomy. Nobody will die of breast cancer. These things are going to happen because of the genome. And it's thrilling. To see what they've done here, it's thrilling. And the other thing that's important is that they are immediately disseminating this information around the world. Great. So doctors in very poor countries, once they're trained to treat accordingly, can access the information. So St. Jude is sort of the living embodiment of everything I hope would happen in every aspect of healthcare because of it.
St. Jude is applying for federal grants made available by the Affordable Care Act to share its research around the country and the world. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Although portions of the listening area did receive some precipitation this weekend, the hot temperatures and lack of rain during the past several weeks have left many people staying indoors and hydrated. But with recent reports about coyotes approaching communities, one could ask, how do wild animals survive in these conditions? Last week, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with wildlife biologist Matt Melson with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. He began the conversation by talking about the first thing to happen in the wild when there's a lack of rain.
I guess one of the more specific things that occurs, of course, when there's a lack of rainfall is your herbaceous, your forbs, your grasses, and things like that start to die off, which are your primary producers and, of course, what most wildlife consume in Arkansas. So basically what we're seeing is the drying of what we call a soft mast, which are your berries, your grasses, like your clovers, all your forbs. So when things like that, and it gets as severe as this, then basically your wildlife start to get hungry, as anyone might imagine, and thirsty. A lot of what the effects we're seeing here are, a lot of times when this happens, you have a lot of what we call human-wildlife interface, and basically all that means is, you know, your wildlife are coming from where they normally forage into suburban areas in search of food.
The coyotes that were in Springdale, or are in Springdale, I mean, I'm assuming they're still there. I mean, they didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. What are they coming out? I mean, what do coyotes eat? What are they coming out looking for?
Garbage, primarily. Dog food, cat food. Anything people are going to leave out that's an easy meal for them.
Did the people in that community have reason to be scared?
Oh, no. You literally have a better chance of being struck by lightning to be attacked by one of these animals. It's never really been documented in Arkansas. However, you know, I'm more in the eyes of protecting the wildlife, so what people could do to protect the wildlife in these cases is not to leave an excess of dog food or cat food or bird seed, things like that, on their property.
So we're not supposed to be feeding the birds?
No, not at all. This time of year, the birds do have plenty of seeds, these dried up grass seeds and things like that. And basically what you're going to do is you're just going to attract forms of wildlife. And
what about leaving out water?
We are fortunate enough around here that there are water sources around. Anything that people are doing to attract wildlife is inherently a bad thing. Especially when you talk about, you know, deer and coyotes and bears, things like that. So, no, we don't, we don't advise people to do any sort of feeding or water, you know, source left outside.
Well, I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for the deer. You know, I grew up, you know, on 80 acres out towards Goshen, and we have deer, you know, all the time. And it kind of makes me sad to see that baby deer walking up to the, you know, empty pond.
Right. Long story short is it's nature. Nature's going to take its course, and it will rebound. It always does, always has. So the things will get better. The things I worry about as a wildlife biologist and wildlife professional are not necessarily the temporary effects that people are seeing now, but if the drought does continue, what I worry about are things like what we call hard mast, your acorns, your hickory trees. If the drought gets to a point where the fruits of these plants or these trees drop their acorns prematurely, then the acorns will rot and the animals won't have food throughout the winter months, which is their primary food sources for deer and things like that throughout the winter months. So there have been several studies and documentations that have seen effects of droughts lasting up to 3 years. And, you know, in next summer may be an extremely wet and cool summer, but we could, in effect, still see some of the repercussions of this drought.
Well, last summer was hot and dry. Mm-hmm. And then this summer, it's hot and dry and even earlier than it was last year.
Right. And we were looking at climatology in December from NOAA, and they were predicting this in December. So we were kind of looking forward to, you know, another hot and nasty summer, and that's what we're seeing.
And so you're saying you're more worried about the effects of,
long-term effects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not even this winter, but in a couple more winters.
Well, it could affect. I mean, they've seen effects for up to two or three years from droughts on specific wildlife populations. I guess in a similar instance, which has nothing to do with drought, but the late freeze we had, a couple winters ago, everything had bloomed. We got a severe freeze. What that does is it kills your soft mass for the entire summer and potentially your hard mass as well. So basically what we saw from that late freeze was a summer full of no food and then a winter full of no food. But what we're seeing now are basically temporary effects of a drought.
Well, so then in the winter, is it okay to be leaving out bird seed? And
yes, I don't have any heartburn with wintertime, because you know all your bears are hibernating at that point. Of course, your deer aren't going to be eating bird seed, and then your birds are going to need supplemental, or your resident non-migratory, like your songbirds, could rely on that food source. So yeah, that's not a problem at all. But during summertime, the songbirds have plenty to eat, and I don't normally advise people to feed.
Have you had reports of bears coming out?
Yeah,
summer.
Yeah, I've got one trap set right now over 12 miles east of Winslow, and I tranquilized one in Van Buren a few weeks ago. So yeah, they're coming out, but it's also in coincidence with the adult females are weaning their young up about a month ago or so. So basically, what we were seeing were young males looking for new territory and getting into residential areas. So yes, it does happen. But as far as the drought goes, we really haven't had enough time to see the effects of the drought on the bears at this point. But the deer are definitely hungry, you know.
What about our lakes, like Beaver Lake? Does this hot, dry weather have an effect on the fish and the lake wildlife?
Well, I'm a wildlife biologist and deal very little with fisheries, but yeah, well, in larger bodies of water, it doesn't affect it as much, but in smaller ponds and smaller lakes, you have what's called eutrophication, which are just algae blooms, which can alter the oxygen levels in a lake or a pond, in small ponds. So that can affect the fish populations greatly in small water sources. And I had a lady call me yesterday wanting to transport her fish because her pond was so low. She wanted to transport her fish to a neighbor's pond just to try to preserve the fish. was looking at this, the U.S. drought monitor that I brought in, and we're fortunate up here in northwest Arkansas compared to the rest of the state, but Johnson, Franklin counties are in a D3 drought, extreme drought, and almost 32% of Arkansas is under this extreme drought. So, like I said, nature's going to take its course. And another thing I guess I could reiterate was our extremely mild winter. I've gotten a lot of calls about parasitic loads on deer. Ticks basically are pretty obscene. So we had that's right. Affecting the wildlife too, because we had such a mild winter, it wasn't cold enough to kill off a lot of the parasites. So not only are your...
So are Lyme disease and stuff like that, is mm-hmm. that...
Yeah, it's pretty prevalent.
Well, and what about, you know, getting deer getting hit by cars just because they're coming out looking for
eating
stuff?
On right away.
Is that happening a lot? Mm-hmm. Does that happen a lot more during?
It does. The things that I deal with primarily, and I've got a fairly obscene amount of calls, are deer in people's commercial gardens or orchards or even their personal gardens. And my personal garden has been demolished. So the deer are coming into people's yards and gardens and eating their my deer were eating my blackberry plants, so they were that hungry. So a lot of the calls I get and issues I'm dealing with are destruction of property from deer, because they're just simply hungry, coming in trying to get a meal from those soft plants. So that's a lot of what I've been dealing with.
We've talked about large animals. I also feel like I have an abundance of rabbits at my house. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I've lived there for 4 years, but I feel like this spring and summer I've seen a ton more than normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, your yard's probably one of the more green places around. I know mine, even though I haven't been watering and wasting water.
I haven't either. I've kind of boycotted
them. Yeah. But, like, the neighbor's field is just scorched. But since there is some shade around my home, then I've been noticing a lot of cottontails, too, coming into my yard. But it's...
There are a ton of them.
It's from what's left of that green grass that's in your yard, basically.
Pretty much just, yeah, it's kind of scary, but you're more worried about wintertime and the long-term effects.
Yeah, the long-term
effects. And tell people not to... leave out food. And
right, don't leave out garbage and dog food and cat food, because that's just going to attract things like your coyotes and your bears and just create more problems.
Matt Melson is a wildlife biologist with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. He spoke to Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas last week.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 9th of July, 2012. It's the birthday of Dame Barbara Cartland, author of several hundred books, most of them romance novels, born in Birmingham, England, 1901. Published her first novel when she was 25. It was called Jigsaw. From the 1970s onward, she produced an average of 23 books a year, and when she died in 2000, she left behind 160 manuscripts. It's the birthday of Oliver Sacks, born in London, 1933, to an extended family of doctors and scientists and religious Zionists. Oliver Sacks, who became a doctor, neurologist, and who has turned case studies of patients with neurological conditions into narratives. In 2001, he wrote a memoir, Uncle Tungsten, Memories of a Chemical Boyhood, in which he talks about his childhood in England during World War II, his Uncle Dave, who made light bulbs, and his older brother, Michael. Both brothers, Oliver and Michael, had been sent to a boarding school during the war, suffered horrible conditions, routinely whipped and bullied, and at the age of 15, his brother began exhibiting symptoms of psychosis. He saw messages everywhere, felt his thoughts were being read. And to cope with the trauma of his brother's illness, Oliver Sacks sought refuge in the neat, orderly, periodic table of elements, sometimes thought about becoming a chemist. And though he went into medicine, he still likes to give elements as birthday gifts. He said, 10 is element 50, and since 10 people have turned 50 lately, I'm out of 10. A good friend of mine was 80 recently, and I said to him, I wish you were 79, because then I could have given you something made of gold. But since you're 80, I have to enclose a bottle of mercury. And it was on this date, 1958, that Lituya Bay in Alaska was hit with the largest mega tsunami ever recorded. Lituya Bay on the Alaska Panhandle, a T-shaped fjord about 7 miles long. An earthquake hit that triggered a rock slide. 40 million cubic yards of rock and ice dropped 3,000 feet into the water, causing a tidal wave 1,720 feet high, 300 feet taller than the Empire State Building. Here's a poem for today by Kim Adonizio. Elephant seals, Año Nuevo. There they lie, fasting and molting and not moving but for an occasional stray flipper that idly rises and sinks down into the mass of massive bodies. This is their summer's work before the bulls swim in to bloody each other for mates. We watch their great sides heave, the effort it takes to stay where they've arrived, amazed they've managed something we can't. What would it be like to live slow and huge, the low slopes of the dunes marking a horizon whose limits we weren't compelled to challenge? For these seals, there is no path that leads away, no car waiting in the wavering heat of the parking lot, and no road takes them to the made world. Here, we're all immensely complicated, and nothing, my darling, is seasonal. Once you and I leave this place, we won't return to it. A poem by Kim Adonizio, Elephant Seals, Año Nuevo, from The Philosopher's Club, published by Boa Editions Limited, used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, providing automated tools to monitor and manage a business's online reviews, because bad reviews can be bad for business. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by Soul Yoga Lounge, located on Dixon Street in front of Clubhouse Fitness in Fayetteville. Hot yoga is available to the community each Friday afternoon at 5:45. All skill levels are welcome. SoulYogaLounge.com for more information. The Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce Small Business Committee's Bring on the Books Book Drive continues through July 24th. The committee and area businesses are collecting new and like new books for children and teens participating in the library's Summer Reading Club, Books for Borrowing, and Reading Roadshow programs. Please bring your books for donation to the library's children's desk. For more information, faylib.org. The Ladies Auxiliary of the Grassy Knob Volunteer Fire Department invites the community to their annual ice cream social Sunday, July 15th from noon to 4 p.m. at the Grassy Knob Community Center located on Highway 187. There's no charge and donations are welcome. For more information, 253-1054. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville Rogers, Fort Smith, Elkins. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I'll be back along with my co-host Kyle Kellums. Thanks again for listening and have a great Monday.